Record Collections and Recollections. Out of the Box on FBI Radio.
Hey, Emily Elvish with you on FBI Radio 94.5. This is Out of the Box. It's a place where every week we dive into one guest record collection and pull out the stories, sounds, and spaces that have shaped their life. Today, my guest and I are broadcasting from Redfern, which is on unceded Gadigal land. I would like to pay my respects to Gadigal elders, past and present and emerging, and extend that respect to any First Nations person listening in. Out of the Box is a program where we share stories through music. First Nations people have been sharing stories across this country for millennia, and I'm privileged to be doing so today. Wherever you're tuning in from so-called Sydney, this land always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Our guest on Out of the Box today was actually one of the first voices I ever heard here on FBI Radio. When you begin presenting here on the station, you sit down for a few sessions where you run through programming, mic technique, and all the ins and outs of broadcasting. And in one of these sessions, we sat down and listened to Jamie Taylor Nielsen presenting on the bridge. And it's safe to say that hearing and admiring her broadcast was a formative experience of my time here at FBI. The soulfulness and passion that carries through her presenting is captivating to hear as a listener. Now presenting Tuesday Arvos here on FBI, Jamie is a presenter, an actor, musician, curator, and easily one of Eora's most beloved voices. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me on Out of the Box today.
Hi, you can't just tell that story and surprise me with that. I didn't know that. That's so nice.
Did you know that they used your mic breaks for training?
No.
I remember Darren sitting us all down and being like, okay, this is what you're aiming for. Whoa. You need to sound like Jamie.
What? Yeah. Wow. Coming from Darren, that's an extreme compliment.
Yeah.
Aww.
Did you have a similar experience when you started presenting?
Yeah. Who do we listen to? God. Tanya Ali.
Mm.
Yeah, she was my like, yeah, she and Darren actually, definitely. They were my like, okay, that's the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both
still.
Legends.
And to be honest, still.
I'm so excited that you're joining us on Out of the Box today. We're going to take a look at a few of the songs you brought with you. This track list is absolutely incredible, and take a look at a few of the stories from your life.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining
us. I'm excited. I was telling you before, it's like kind of a trip to be the interviewee.
Yeah, on the other side.
Yeah.
I would love to take a look back at some of the early stories from your life. You grew up in an apartment in Clove Valley with your mum. Could you paint us a picture of what your life looks like in that space?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was always me and my mum. I'm the only child of a single mother, and my mum is also the only child of a single mother, so we have a similar story. Yeah, it was really beautiful growing up near the beach. I don't know. I was pretty out there, I think, as a kid. I was always like singing and carrying on, and I was always kind of like a bit of a dorky performing arts child, I think. But yeah, it was pretty beautiful. Mum worked a lot. You know, at times I think it was definitely, you know, pretty turbulent, but at the same time I was, you know, very privileged and had lots of great opportunities. And, you know, mum was just doing her best ultimately. And then, yeah, I think we lived in the East until I was about 9 years old. But, yeah, we lost my dad pretty early in my life, but it was always just me and my mum, really, like, solid in general.
Mm. And what were some of those, you mentioned that you were a performing arts child, what were some of those avenues for self-expression that you had?
I was put in dance really early and I stayed in dance for a long time. I don't think that was ever really a huge passion of mine, to be honest, but I loved to sing, I loved music. There's all these really cringe videos of me as a kid. I used to do like these like TV commercials for my mum, like I would walk out, oh, and I had this... I had this really bizarro alter ego called Fairy Pink Whistle, and I was a witch but also a fairy, and I would only be addressed as Fairy Pink Whistle for like long periods of the day. So there's these videos of me like refusing to hear my mum being called my own name. Yeah, it was real time.
Did that ever leave the space, like outside the house? Did other people know about that?
No, thankfully I think I left the alter ego at home. But yeah, lots of dance, lots of drama. And then as a kid, I think, yeah, I was, I started working as a kid pretty young, doing acting and eventually doing voiceovers, which is something I still do. Kind of later in life became my bread and butter. But yeah, I was always, doing something.
How did you first connect with voice acting?
My mum worked in TV at that time, and she, I don't know the story properly. Someone needed a kid's voice on something. And then from there, it became, you know, apparent, like, you know, mum's friend or something was like, she could actually, there's actually a market for that. Like, you can do that. Kids can do voiceovers. And yeah, I started doing it. I went and did like a workshop at the agency that I still have. They still represent me, RMK. And yeah, I started working, and I was pretty good at it as a kid, and I eventually became kind of the second income earner for my family. Like, I was, yeah, contributing to the household.
Starting it at so young too, did it feel like work at the time, or did it feel more like this is something I do on my weekends, this is a hobby?
Well, it wasn't on the weekends. Like, there was a lot of, yeah, after school and sometimes being taken out of school, and it was a job. I think auditioning as a child, you get across the stakes pretty quickly.
Mm.
Like, it's very, you know, I do think regardless of the good intentions of people and stuff, like, you do kind of internalize as a child, like, make them like you.
Mm.
And I think it's interesting the sort of flow on effects, like, socially that can have as well. But yeah, I got to do heaps of fun stuff. But as a voice actor and as a child, like, working in TV and radio, you do kind of end up being around adults all the time. So I think I learned how to interact with adults. Also, as an only child, you interact with adults a lot. I think that was a big part of my childhood, yeah.
Mm. Do you feel like that influenced the way that you interacted with art and other forms of creativity when you were growing up, working in those spaces?
Maybe. I think it took me a while to separate that part of my life from just what I liked, because everything was about work and performance. Mm. And, you know, succeeding. Same with dance. Like, dance is really intense. I think the pressure is quite intense. It's just culturally kind of like how it is in a lot of those spaces, for children's, like, performing arts. Maybe it's better now. It wasn't that bad, to be clear. But yeah, I think, like, it took me a while to understand, like, art and music and culture and, you know, can just be enjoyed, I guess,
yeah,
instead of it being about, like, getting a desired result.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. Ooh, is this therapy?
No, thank you so much for sharing. Was there a point for you where you felt that crossover happened, where you're like, okay, this is when I can start appreciating these things just for me and it's less of an obligation?
I think so. I think when I was a teenager, I had a real moment of like, I don't like this anymore. Mainly like, yeah, like the ballet stuff and like that end of things. I always really liked music and I always really liked voiceovers and you know, that was cool and that stuff was fun. But yeah, I had a real moment, I think, when I was maybe 14, 15, started listening to a lot of punk music and, like, got really into, like, Riot Girl and started listening to, like, Bikini Kill and stuff. And it really, yeah, it was this moment for me where I was like, I'm not a ballerina. I'm never going to be a ballerina. I haven't been good at this for a long time. And, yeah, I kind of rejected that part of myself a little bit, or just retired it, I guess. Did I answer that question? Sorry, probably not.
No, that's so interesting. And you've added in a beautiful Riot Girl song in your track list. But before we dive into that, I'd love to take a look at one of the tracks from your earlier life. You brought Madonna, Candy Perfume Girl, with you today. Tell us a little bit about this track, what it means to you.
I remember as a child, still in the phase of listening to, like, my mum's CDs, the only music I think I had bought was Spice World on cassette. Amazing album. But yeah, it was Madonna, Ray of Light, that album. It was Angelique Kidjo, and it was a Gypsy Kings album. Like, those were like the three kind of, I remember them so well, always putting them on. And Ray of Light was this 1998 release from Madonna where she was sounding really different to what she was usually kind of known for. But I had no concept of who she was. Like, I was 6 when it came out. So I, for ages, had no concept of, like, Material Girl Madonna or, you know, any of that, and just kind of knew her as this, like, new age spiritual pop kind of, like, trip psyche artist. But I used to go, I don't know why, but I used to go to sleep to the album Ray of Light every night, which is really weird when you listen to the album because it's not sleeping music at all. It's not chill, a lot of it. But I really liked it and I still really love it. And I just know the album back to front. Like, it's just very evocative for me. Still, it's a great album. And Candy Perfume Girl is just one of the coolest tracks on it, I reckon. Just doing like a real PJ Harvey thing. I kind of like that I was like listening to this as a little girl.
It's
like,
very edgy for a 6-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, with no idea of like the content of it whatsoever, but I really liked it.
Did you and your mum's music taste, like, keep that common thread as you got older?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. It really converged. She always is, like, rolling her eyes being like, I don't know where you got all of this from, because it definitely wasn't for me. She reckons I got a lot of it from my dad because he was really into music. And, I don't know. Like, I just kind of found it. I had a lot of friends showing me stuff when I was older. I think it was just a matter of like going through your mum's music. I think everyone has that experience, right? Like, you play your parents' music and you find the stuff that you like. It's kind of your first little record store.
Let's dive in. This is Madonna, Candy Perfume Girl, chosen by my guest today on Out of the Box, Jamie Taylor Nielsen. Keep tuned. We'll be back on the other side of this. You're back listening to Out of the Box. My name's Emily Elvish. I'm joined by Jamie Taylor Nielsen here today. We've been diving in. We dive into your first track that you brought. That was Candy Perfume Girl by Madonna. And I'd like to look at some of the work you did in the hospo space. You said that you worked in a pub in the Inner West for about 6 years. What did the Inner West nightlife scene look like when you first started working there and going out?
Oh my God. We went out every night. I still have some of my best friends from that job. I worked at the Rose in Chippendale for like 6 years. And it was just really, really fun. And it was also really, really chaotic. But we all used to go out on King Street every night. And this was kind of when the Cross was still a thing. So King Street wasn't really like a party district in the way that it became when the Cross kind of locked its doors. So we would go to the Marley every single night, which is actually, now I think about it, I just immediately had a physical, like, oh God. We would finish up at midnight and then all go meet up with our other friends that worked at the other pubs and venues and stuff, and then go meet up on King Street, and we would go to the Marley, and there would always be someone there regardless of the day of the week. Like, we used to go out 7 days a week and there'd always be the same little group of people like converging either at the Marley, or if it was Sunday, we'd go to Stecky's because it was open, had like the late license. Or we would be at someone's house until the wee hours. But yeah, it was really fun, but it was also, yeah, like, gee, I don't know. I think about it now, though, it was the same people every night and we did all really bond. And like, there were definitely some friendships that were party friendships. And there were definitely some like chaotic choices made. But yeah, a lot of those relationships I still have now. And there was a lot more music going around. There was a lot more choice, I think, even though we ignored the choice and just went to the same places every night. There was a late night kind of energy that I think is actually coming back now, but went away for quite a while.
Mm. What drew you to, you mentioned going to the same places, but when you were like going there for gigs, what drew you to the bands that were playing or the certain artists that were playing? What connected you to that?
What was I listening to in that era? Like, I was going to a lot of festivals. I think a lot of it was social. I think a lot of it was like friends' bands. I think that is a big part of it still. I think Sydney era as a as an audience for live music, I always say, like, you go down to NAMM and you go to see shows in Melbourne and there's, like, people are there just to see the band. Like, they've travelled to a space just to go and see the band and, like, they always buy the merch and, like, they're fully wrapped in the performance. And I'm always joked that, like, in Sydney, you go to your friend's gig and you, like, kind of sit out the front, like, having a cigarette for most of it, and you kind of go to, like, see the people that you know. Like, that was kind of the energy around live music for a while, which is, I don't want to paint everyone with that same brush because I know there are super passionate fans and there are super passionate people, you know, putting on shows. But yeah, it was very social for us. It was very our friends' bands, and we also missed a lot of stuff because we were working in hospo. So we would just kind of do what was going on late at night.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about King Street as not necessarily a party scene too. Mm. I moved to Sydney in the start of 2020 and I'd only ever known The Cross as like completely dead and King Street as the hub of everything.
Yeah. Which is so, because it just didn't used to be like that.
Yeah.
King Street always had its own personality and it's had its own kind of wildness. But I do think that it used to be a bit weirder and a bit more of a safe space for people as well. And I think when The Cross closed and everyone just started piling in to King Street, I know I had friends of mine, like queer friends, who were saying like, oh, I don't feel the same level of safety that I used to here because the community just expanded really rapidly. But I think it's kind of evened out. But yeah, that like when I was 18, we were all going to The Cross. I don't think I enjoyed it that much. But we went, like, that was kind of where you went at the end of the night as well. But yeah, by the time I was working at the pub properly, it was always just, yeah, Newtown.
Were you working in hospo when that sort of change happened?
I think I was overseas. I think I was working in hospo. I'd saved up money and it was 2013, 2014, I think the lockdowns. No, not the lockdowns, the lockouts. Pre-lockdown, the lockouts.
There's been so many eras.
Yes. The lockouts kind of hit 2013, 2014, I'm pretty sure. I remember being overseas and coming home and everything was different. Mm. And there being all these restrictions on how late you could go out and when you could buy a drink. And yeah, it was crushing.
And where did you start connecting with the music scene back then as an artist, or did that come a little bit later in your life?
Not as an artist, no. I was just a big fan then. And I remember I started putting on like kind of a semi-acoustic like gigs upstairs at the pub. Mm. I like convinced the owners to let me do it. And I was just getting all my friends in and like giving them a gig on like a Friday night. And I got into it that way and I learned a lot of hard lessons about the realities of putting on events, I think, on a small scale then. The artist stuff came much later. I never ever would have thought that I would ever play in a band back then.
It's probably nice to get that initial experience of running events before stepping into that space as well.
Yeah, I think it gives you a level of empathy and I think it's definitely useful to see both sides of it, yeah.
Did you continue curating events after that?
Yeah. So I was at uni and I started studying entertainment management. I went to AIM and I did these great courses there. Like, it was all like events management, and your major assignment was to put on an event. And through that I met two friends of mine, Alex and Ellie, and we started off the back of that like a collective that we ran for a few years called Coven. And it was all about putting on gender diverse live music lineups, because then it was still really like really normal to have 100% male lineups, which seems weird now because it's really really different. But yeah, 10 years ago that was like very common, and we were just kind of off it and just started putting on parties with lineups that like we wanted to go and see. It was really fun.
I'd love to dive into your next song that you brought with you. You've chosen Golden Lion by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And you've mentioned that you think this is a perfect song, and I'd love to know what for you makes a perfect song.
Oh, that's such an insane question for me to answer. I don't know. Golden Lion has just always been my favourite song. Since I was like 14 or 15, this song was like the jump on the bed, scream all the lyrics to this song, Karen O doing it, like, oh. The production's really, really interesting and weird. There are all these forums online trying to get like photos of the pedal boards that the guitarists were using in like this album. This album, Show Your Bones, is such a formative album for me. I was really, really, really obsessed with all the songs on this album, but this one in particular. And I don't even know what the song's about. Like, I have looked into it. There's a lot of kind of theories, but it doesn't really, there's no sort of like lore around what this song is about. And maybe that's why it's been my favorite for so long, because those are the kind of songs that you can project what you want to onto. Yeah, I don't know. Her vocals are just epic. There's like a guitar in it that sounds a lot like a theremin. It's kind of really out of this world and really dynamic. It's a really dynamic song. Like, it shifts from like this sort of acoustic, really lo-fi, quiet energy all the way into like screaming guitars, massive drums, like wailing vocals. Like, yeah, it's just very dramatic.
This is Golden Lion by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, chosen by my guest on Out of the Box today, Jamie Taylor Nielsen. We'll be back on the other side of this one. Gold Lion's gonna tell me where the light is. You're back listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. We're joined today by Jamie Taylor Nielsen. We've been chatting a bit about your early life, your work in HOSPO, and you were speaking just before about your work in the event space and curating. Tell me a bit about what you studied at uni and your time there.
I started at Sydney Uni. I went straight from high school and started uni at 17, which felt like the right choice at the time, but I found uni really overwhelming coming out of high school. I remember being really out of my comfort zone and feeling really anonymous all of a sudden, which is kind of just growing up, I guess. But I did that for a bit. I made some good friends. Some friends of mine there were at FBI. That's kind of how I first came into it. But I ended up quitting, ended up leaving because I was just felt like I was studying stuff that, at the end of high school felt like that's what I should be doing. And it became apparent to me that actually it's not really what I should be doing, and maybe it's okay to just leave it. And that was kind of something that was, I was the first person in my family to ever go to university. Like, it was a really big deal. And so to leave was like a really big deal. So I went traveling instead and kind of did that, like, you know, year in between a bit later, and came back from that year in between. And I was, a lot of my friends were in bands or working in that kind of zone, and a few friends of mine said I should do like music business, and so I ended up doing entertainment management at AIM and came back and did that and really, really loved it and was like such a nerd for it, like really like loved it. So we were doing events and we were doing artist management and like publishing and kind of just like music industry school basically. It was great. It was a really good course for me. And we also did Australian radio when I was there. So I was really focused on events work, but I kind of fell in love with the Australian radio course that I did, and got really dorky about like Australian music quotas, the difference between independent radio and commercial radio, how advertisers really have like a huge amount of influence on the music that you hear on commercial radio stations. I remember my mind being blown by this, but like, you know, a commercial radio station will play music that charts the highest, that's kind of not necessarily reflecting the community that that station is embedded in, but more will look internationally and look at the US stations and be like, cool, these top 50 songs are what are charting the most, and the advertisers that play ads on our station will like it if we play them, because then we can tell them we have the highest listenership and it's actually just about them making money. And I remember being like, wait, what? I really remember getting like really invigorated by this and thinking like, that's not cool though. Like, why do advertisers like decide what we listen to? It should be the DJs and the producers and like the creative community. So I really kind of fell in love with independent radio in understanding that, and ended up coming and volunteering at FBI kind of as a result of that.
Yeah.
And not really ever planning on being a presenter, but I wanted to come and work on the behind the scenes stuff and work on the events and just be around it.
And you mentioned some of your friends from Sydney Uni. Were they presenting at the time at FBI?
Yeah, I remember being like driving home from my hospo job, hearing friends of mine like on the all-nighter at FBI.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
What was that experience like hearing them on the other side?
It was so weird. It was so weird. Yeah. And I remember it was kind of the first time it just demystified radio for me in a way that was like, it seemed accessible all of a sudden, I guess.
And at what point did you apply for FBI? Did you immediately go into presenting after that?
Not immediately. So it was 2017. I had wrapped up at uni. I'd wrapped up in hospital as well. So I was really just doing voiceover work at that time, which was awesome and is, you know, pretty freelance hours. So 2017 I came on as a volunteer, and then I was working in the music library and I was like writing little music reviews, and I worked on FBI Turns 15, which was really cool. That was like a really big event and like really exciting, and there were big artists on that I was obsessed with, and I helped run one of the supporter drives, and then eventually they were like, oh, we want to put you on all-night, is like, you should be a presenter. And I remember being like, oh, isn't that like really late at night? And so I was like, yeah, and it's like kind of awesome that it's being offered to you, so maybe you should say yes. So I was having this moment of like, oh my god, yes, what am I saying? Absolutely. But I was really nervous, and I kind of look at that and I'm like, oh, that was such a little moment of self-sabotage. Of being like, no, I don't know if I can do this. No. And I'm really, really glad that I did. I'm really glad I did. It was awesome.
Tell me a little bit about FBI Turns 15. What was that night like?
That was so fun. I was working on a team that was putting it together, kind of just assisting in the weeks in the lead up, like liaising between all the artists and like tour managers, and like inputting all of their like tech specs and riders and all that stuff, and like making sure we all had all of the gear that they wanted, and like working in that kind of end of stuff. And then when it all came together on the day of, it was this huge, the scale of it really hit me, I think, that day. It was great. And I had a few like little fangirl moments as well. But I also remember when Body Type played, and I remember like Soph and Cess from Body Type, I was like doing some sort of artist liaison thing. I don't know, it was probably like getting them water. And we had this moment where they were playing on that big stage, and they had played one of our first coven parties, and we all kind of went like, look how cool. Like, you know, we're all like quite young. But I remember Sam for the Great played that night, which was a huge big deal for me because I was really, really big fan. Still a massive Sampa fan. But the first time I'd ever heard her was listening to FBI radio in my little Ford Laser with my P plates on. And she was doing an interview on air, and I think she did a live set, and she just released The Great Mixtape, which was like her debut release. And so it was this beautiful full circle moment, working on an event like that and having her on stage. It was cool.
It's beautiful because the next track you brought is Female from Sampa the Great. And why did you choose this track in particular from that album?
It was just a standout for me. This was the one, I think she performed this on air. I think this was the one that I heard when I was listening to the station before I was a volunteer here, and was just like, what is this? and it was really, it was like very anthemic for a lot of me and my friends and stuff. We just always had this on.
Beautiful. Let's dive in. This is Sampa the Great with Female. You're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. This is Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. We just heard from Sampa the Great with Female. I'm joined here by Jamie Tyler Nielsen on the show today. We've talked a little bit about your work with Coven on the show, and you were curating some really beautiful femme-led events. Can you think back to the first Coven event that you put on?
I think it was at the Red Rattler. I think we did it at the Red Rattler, and our friend Michaela Stafford, who's a really incredible artist who is doing like epic things now. We were really lucky to work with her at that time. Did all these cool installations. who played? I think Body Type played. I think Julia Y played. There were a couple of bands around that probably aren't active anymore. But it was great and people came. I remember people bought tickets and we were like, whoa. It was really special to have that kind of crowd there of like, not just your friends. I remember the first time we saw people, I was like, do you know that person? And the other two were like, no, I don't know that person. We were like, oh, there are people here that we're not friends with. That's like a really beautiful feeling. I remember we got some support from FBI. I know Hannah Galvin was at FBI then. She's been here for like 11 years. She was very supportive of the stuff that we were doing. And they kind of like, they forced us to ask questions as well, you know, like when you, like we were really like, yeah, female lineups. And I think I had some conversations with friends at the time who were like very generous with me, you know, queer and trans friends sort of gently pushing me to like challenge some ideas I had then around like what a gender diverse lineup looks like and what needs to happen in those spaces kind of beyond the binary. And yeah, we learned a lot. I think all of us learned a lot doing those shows.
I love this common thread that you have running between like Coven and Dead Witch.
Yes.
I don't know if this was intentional, but these images of witchcraft and the occult.
Yeah.
Was there anything that inspired these two names in particular?
Oh, I was really into witchcraft in my early 20s. What I really needed to do was therapy. And instead what I did was Tumblr witchcraft. I'm taking the piss a bit, but like I did, I've always been drawn to those stories, stories of like the witch trials and, you know, that's just one lens of witchcraft. There are many lenses to look through witchcraft, much more ancient practices, you know, kind of belonging to other cultures as well. And I think just I've always enjoyed this idea of like a female energy, although it doesn't have to be a female energy, but like sort of classic trope of like an uncontainable, rebellious person in tune with nature, mm-hmm. in tune with their bodies, bodily autonomy. Yeah, I've just always found that really seductive and something I think I always wanted. And I think that's kind of, there's sort of a maybe a mythology and like the women in my family too is of being a little bit outside of, you know, society. And there's a lot, I think particularly my grandmother, you know, like being a single woman, single mother in the 60s was a pretty brutal experience. Yeah, that imagery has always been really attractive to me and really resonated with me.
I feel like it's becoming so much more publicized and like celebrated too, this idea of like the witchcraft as community, as empowerment.
Mm.
I love how that's coming through now.
Yeah. And I went to this, you know, all girls Catholic school that was like the local school that for some reason my mum was like, you're going to go there. Oh, I know why. Because I got a performing arts scholarship to go there. But I wasn't, you know, baptized, like never really spent any time in church or anything like that. And I was the only kid in my grade who wasn't baptized. I remember when we went to church in school, I would have to like sit because, you know, everyone would get up and receive communion. I remember the first time we went and my sort of coordinator was like, no, not you. You have to sit here in the pews.
Oh,
I remember this like bizarre experience of being like, huh, okay. And like, you know, that I don't know, maybe it was just like a little moment of rebellion for me or something to kind of start pulling on this thread and learning more about these stories of, you know, how accusations of witchcraft were kind of used to dismantle the power of a lot of women in society, a lot of the women who were the community sort of healers.
Mm.
It was a really good way of taking away their power and influence. And yeah.
And how did Dead Witch come into your world?
So Dead Witch was, I mean, we were all friends, and all of us were doing it for the first time except for Zoe, of the boys, who was in the original lineup of the band. And I had been in a band called Hedy Lamarr with some friends as well. And it was kind of just about like learning to make noise and take up a bit of space on stage after kind of being told, or believing that that's not something that, you know, we would ever do. And we were having a lot of conversations at the time, not with Dead Witch, but with my previous band about, young boys, it seems like, are kind of encouraged and to just get up and make noise and learn how to play music and be in a band. And it's kind of like, yeah, make mistakes. You don't have to be good at it to do it. And there wasn't that sort of like community accessibility around, like, you know, other young people picking up an instrument and just kind of learning it. And there was this sort of sense of mystique and inaccessibility. Like, I always thought that like everyone who was in a band like knew how to read music, and therefore I could never be in a band because I didn't know how to read music. I think I said that to my friend, one of my mates, one day, and he was like, oh, he was like, just to be clear, no one in your favorite band like knows how to read music. Yeah, and so I had done a bit of a, mainly a vocalist, like I've never claimed to be a particularly talented guitarist or musician, but I really like it. I think there's a sense of musicality that you get from singing, from listening to a lot of music, and yeah, we were all mates. And then when COVID happened, we weren't allowed to see each other for ages, and we kind of had this joke. We had this group chat that was like, oh, we would refer to it as like the band. And then when you were first allowed to get five people in a room together, like, remember that? We were allowed to all of a sudden hang out with people, but it was five people. That was what we did. We just started like jamming when we were allowed to hang out. And we were writing some music together. And that was really fun. And then Zoe was like, I got us our first gig, and everyone freaked out. Like, we were like, absolutely not. What? No. What? And then it became very real very quickly. And I think we had like 6 weeks to get a set together, and we did it. We like boot camped it and like got together our first set, and, you know, had our first experience on stage together as Dead Witch. And yeah.
Where was that first gig?
It was at the Leichhardt Bolo, and it was on a lineup with Body Type, Sweetie, Megafauna, and us.
That's so iconic.
Yeah, and it was like, it was really early days for Sweetie and Megafauna as well. And it's really like, we're really good mates with all of them still.
You mentioned a lot about like all these pockets of your life where you found like a lot of rebellion and a lot of ways to kind of push against things. And I love that the next song you brought is by X-Ray Specs. This track is called Oh Bondage Up Yours.
Yes.
Has that pull of rebellion stayed with you in your current life?
I actually wouldn't classify myself as very rebellious. I think I'm quite like an anxious, fairly like, I'm not spiritually like authoritarian, but I've always been really scared of like getting in trouble. I like always think I'm in trouble as well. Sort of my base existence is everyone here is mad at me, and I have to figure out what they're mad at me about and then make them like me. Like, that's kind of like if I walk into a space, you know, which we're working on. No, I think I guess a bit rebellious. I guess, yeah, actually. I don't know. I wouldn't classify myself as rebellious, but at the same time, yeah, I mean, I have heaps of tattoos and I do small acts of rebellion a lot, I think. And I work in a space that's pretty different. I've never, you know, particularly liked the idea of like, for me, it's like not really, doesn't really work for me to have like a full-time job and to glorify the grind. And yeah, I guess in some ways I'm rebellious.
I find it really funny how rebellion can sometimes get lumped in with literally just having boundaries or like asserting who you are.
Oh my God. Yes. Though. Like, actually though. Yeah. And like, yeah. And you do kind of, you do get, I'm quite stubborn. I don't think I was, yeah, it's hard. I'm having trouble with this question because I guess I don't really classify myself as particularly rebellious, but I think in some ways I must be. And I am pretty good at putting up boundaries these days. And I do notice there is, you know, a social fallout from that, I think, for people who do that. Yeah, you're right. It's just putting up boundaries, isn't it?
Let's dive in. This is X-Ray Specs with Oh Bondage Up Yours. You're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5.
Some people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think, oh, bondage up yours! 1, 2, 3, 4!
Just heard from X-Ray Specs with Oh, Bondage Up Yours. That track was chosen by Jamie Taylor Nielsen, my guest on Out of the Box today. We've been listening to your record collection, Jamie, sharing a few stories from your life. And I'd love to wrap up the episode today by looking at a track that reminds you of someone and maybe ties into a specific part of your life. And the track you've chosen for this is Golden Hour by Babitha. Could you tell us a little bit about why you chose this track?
Yes. I don't think I need to wax lyrical about Babitha too much on FBI. I think FBI listeners know how amazing she is. She's really a special artist. I've known Imo for quite a long time. And this track is, it's part of the Through the Light EP this is from is just one of the best breakup pieces of work ever. If you are nursing a broken heart, listen to Through the Light, listen to some Babitha. This song, Golden Hour in particular, was really helpful to me at a time where I was going through some pretty rough heartbreak. And I just listened to it a lot. It was like the start of like the second lockdown. Was my kind of world was like just shattered. Like it was this really like big surprise, heartbreak that I was going through. And I all of a sudden was like living alone in this big house with me and my dog, trying to figure out if, you know, I needed to like find a place for me and my dog to live or if I needed to get housemates in, and like realizing like I couldn't like go out with my friends and like, you know, get through this big change in my life, you know, with the help of many other people around me. It was something I really had to like get myself through. So I was going on these like really unhinged, like huge walks with my dog every morning, like at sunrise, and like walking like 10Ks and like just listening to heaps and heaps and heaps and heaps of music. This is a song that I was listening to a lot at that time. I was friends with Imogen, Babitha, and I was friends with some other people in the band as well. And the guitarist for this band is named Lex. And anyway, we're getting married in November this year.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, we're really in love. But I this song was like very special to me as this kind of like thing that got me through a bit of a hard time. And now like is weirdly this way in which Lex, who is just like my best friend and like kind of I understand the idea of like having an other half, I guess, like being with him, and he's just like a huge cheerleader for me and is somebody that my entire like nervous system like relaxes around him. Like we're just he's just amazing. And we like play shows together now, and like I get up in Babitha every now and then and do, you know, backing vocals and stuff. We get to have all these amazing experiences together, and there's something really beautiful about in this bizarre way he was kind of there helping me through like a hard time through this song, you know, before anything was ever going on between us. So now I listen to this like heartbreak, like, you know, breakup song, but actually just feel really happy, and I'm just reminded of like this person that I really love.
How did you two first connect?
We were friends. We had been friends, already for a few years. And then in lockdown, in that second lockdown, you know, we just got a lot closer. We were living quite close to each other, and he was one of those people in those lockdowns that was really checking in on all of his mates and dropping like cheese platters over to his friends' houses and like making everyone food and kind of, you know, like he was just always like, what are you up to? Let's go for a walk. How are you going? And I'd be like, so bad. And like, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Lots of people, I think, have a really beautiful relationship with him because he's just one of those like very dependable, very calm, non-judgmental people that's really easy to be around. And yeah, like that friendship like was a really beautiful foundation for us. Yeah, and then we sort of inconveniently, like, to our, like, horror, realised we needed to have a conversation about having feelings for each other, which was like, oh, God. But, yeah, I don't know, it kind of – it worked out really well in the end. It was a bit of a difficult transition, but it was, really worth it.
What have you two sort of learned from each other since being – making that transition between being friends and –
He's really good at filling his time really beautifully. Like he's like a real hobby person. Like he is, he'll practice something and practice something until he gets really good at it. He really like follows things through. He loves to make things. He like made me a, he's made me a bunch of like custom pedal boards and like restored guitars. And, you know, he's an incredible musician. He's a really good cook. But he always remembers to like have fun. Like he's really taught me not to take things so seriously. He's taught me to sort of say less, listen more. Yeah, he's got a really good philosophy on life. And we're quite similar in that both of us kind of refuse to glamorize the grind. We both have, I think, a pretty nice work-life balance. And we're both privileged to be able to have that. He's just really beautiful, gentle person.
Is that something that you found together, that like joint love for slowing down? And
I think he was always better at it. I think it's, yeah, that's something that he's always been good at. He's that kind of like, we'll wander down and read the paper and do the crossword and sit and have a cup of coffee at a cafe kind of a person.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm kind of more of a like run out the door with my toothbrush in my mouth, speed to the cafe and grab like a long black and like keep running, you know, like I think I have more of a chaotic energy than he does. But at the same time, I think he also has his own way of overthinking things, or, you know, and I think I like to think I can pull him out of some of that stuff and settle him down a bit more. And
how do you hold space for each other in those moments?
Oh, he's really, really, really tolerant of me. It's like cringing thinking about it. I don't know. We're really good at like healthy, you know, the idea of like, you know, every relationship you have rupture and repair.
Mm.
We're really good at repair. Like we always are able to come back to each other and, you know, if we're like figuring stuff out. I think we're quite good at being able to make sure that the other person knows we're always talking about like the behavior is something that is problematic, not them as a person. There's, you know, always seems to be this base level of like, it's okay underneath. But I mean, he's just really beautiful. He's just really tuned into me. Like he can just look at me from across the room and like know if I'm like overthinking something or like some going somewhere in my head. He did to me like this morning. He was like, hello, what, you know. I didn't even realize I was doing what he was like, what's going on in there? Like he'll always be able to like tell. And same in the opposite direction. We just really understand each other on this base level. Unlike he's just somebody that I want next to me, you know, for everything. I really love him.
So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jamie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was really an honor to come on to Out of the Box. So thank you very much.
I'm so excited to dive into this track. This is Babatha with Golden Hour. You'll be listening to Lunch after this. You're listening to Out of the Box.